The United States of America is the most successful nation the world has ever known.
Summer movie season is here, and while what you're hearing may sound like a trailer for a summer blockbuster,
humans cannot reach their potential, cannot realize their dreams unless they're free.
It's actually an ad from presidential candidate Tim Pawlenty.
We have seen difficulties before.
Sounds exciting, right? Here's another one.
I think we have to tell the American people the truth and lead with integrity. And ask the American people to rise to the occasion.
That's an ad from Mitt Romney, who announced his own presidential bid this past week. These ads use sweeping music, cinematic editing, and look more like Hollywood movie trailers than commercials about politicians. That's our cover story today, how Hollywood is reshaping campaign politics, why voters might buy in, and why one conservative movie producer is betting $1 million that they will. I'm Rachel Martin, in for Guy Raz. This is Weekends on All Things Considered from NPR News.
They're very good ads.
Darrell West is author of Air Wars, Television Advertising in Election Campaigns.
They demonstrate kind of a new emerging trend in campaign advertising because we're seeing kind of a blurring of the line between politics and entertainment.
These ads, released online and some 2 minutes long, are coming mainly from Republicans right now. But West says their inspiration probably lies in Barack Obama's 2008 campaign. Back then, Obama aired a half-an-hour television special in primetime that was pretty cinematic in its own right.
The viewer is seeing wheat fields in the background. You see Americans engaging in daily activities. And then in the video itself, once you get into it,
each passing month,
Barack Obama uses very powerful visuals, images that people could relate to, and then using ordinary Americans to tell the story about the problems that they were having.
Mark Dowell and his wife Melinda have worked at the local plant for most of their adult lives. Juliana Sanchez is a widow with two children and a mortgage.
So that was 2008. Today's presidential candidates aren't just using narrative and music to tug on your heartstrings. They're trying to rip them apart.
It takes an extraordinary effort. It takes extraordinary commitment.
Some of these ads actually do take on the features of a mini-movie.
The Valley Forge wasn't easy.
Campaigns today really require a very strong storyline because there's just so much information out there in society. You need a strong narrative to break through all that information clutter.
And the rewards of breaking through that clutter are huge. In 2008, West says 80% of voters said TV was the most likely way they'd learn about a political candidate. 71% said political ads help me understand what a candidate stands for.
When you look at a campaign budget, about half of the money still goes for television ads because that's still, even in the internet era, where people get much of their information about the campaign.
And what about style? Is there any evidence that these more epic, cinematic ads work better than traditional political ads? Is the audience saying, yeah, I'd see that movie?
People do believe that these epic ads are influential. Voters like to see those types of presentations. They often find those presentations memorable. And that style of communication can be very effective for politicians.
Darrell West, he's the author of Air Wars, Television Advertising in Election Campaigns. For a deeper look at the cinematic techniques at work in ads like Tim Pawlenty's, we went to NPR's film critic, Bob Mandello.
If you watch this ad, it is a whole bunch of little tiny bits. There's lots of quick edits between things like a Martin Luther King speech and jets flying over. I'm not sure what all that has to do with Mr. Pawlenty, but it places him there. And the other thing is that he doesn't speak to the camera in this. He's giving speeches, but you never see him just sort of looking at the camera the way that you do in most political ads. It's designed to place him in the context of Americana and make him look very forceful by making him sound forceful. It puts all that music behind him.
Let's talk about that music. I mean, first, before we talk, let's take a listen.
If prosperity were easy, everybody around the world would be prosperous. If freedom were easy, everybody around the world would be free. If security were easy, everybody around the world would be secure. They are not.
That's high drama, man. Okay, now let's hear the speech from the ad, but as Pawlenty originally delivered it at the National Press Club this year.
If prosperity were easy, everybody around the world would be prosperous. If freedom were easy, everybody around the world would be free. If security were easy, everybody around the world would be secure. They are not.
So a little different.
Yeah, no, he's actually delivering the speech pretty forcefully. But, you know, when you have that music behind you, I mean, I want brasses behind me when I'm talking.
Yeah, it makes it makes you sound very important.
Exactly. There's also a history of using this to power speeches in movies. And I have a favorite example of that. If you go back to the Henry V that Laurence Olivier made, he made it at the height of World War II, and he was trying to inspire the British public, and he did that with the music of his own voice.
We few, we happy few, we band of brothers, for he today that sheds his blood with me shall be my brother, be he ne'er so base.
That's 1944. Now, Kenneth Branagh came along and wanted to do Henry V in 1989. That's a different era. That's after Vietnam. War doesn't sound as appealing to a contemporary audience, so he needed to punch it up a little. And listen what he did.
We few, we happy few, we band of brothers, for he today that sheds his blood with me shall be my brother. Be he ne'er so vile, this day shall gentle his condition. And gentlemen in England now abed shall think themselves accursed they were not here.
Wow.
It's soaring, isn't
it? Oh,
it
is soaring.
And you do, you get all goosebumply.
And it's there's an optimism, strangely enough, about this speech of war.
Yeah, that music is just soaring, and it really pumps it.
But really what this is about is telling stories, and that's what filmmakers are doing. That's what they do with this music. They're trying to lead us to an emotional place. I guess it would make sense that in politics, they're trying to do the same thing. They're creating leading men and women characters.
You know, in film, you want to use everything that's at your disposal. You use the sound and you use the visuals, and these days you use the 3D to try and make it as full an experience as possible. I assume that in politics, they are trying to do exactly the same thing.
NPR's Bob Mondello. Thanks.
Thank you.
Another candidate, potential candidate that is, with a cinematic call to action, is Sarah Palin. Filmmaker Steve Bannon spent $1 million on a documentary film about Palin. It's called The Undefeated, and it will screen across the country this month. Bannon says he made the film without any editorial input from the Palin camp, and he reaches deep for theatrical inspiration.
I needed to get to the people in Alaska. They would be kind of the Greek chorus. And you would actually be in the middle of the whirlwind, which was Governor Palin's time in Alaska. I would bring in sound ups, you bring in news footage, you bring in interviews, you bring in speeches, you bring in all this great footage they had out there in Alaska television. As I started to get into the film and actually physically make it, I realized I didn't want a narrator and I needed a linking device. Since I had studied particularly the first half of Going Rogue.
Sarah Palin's book.
Yeah, we went to HarperCollins and got the audio rights. So you hear her voice in there and it kind of links the scenes together.
So some might see a precedent for this work looking at Barack Obama's half an hour television special that aired during the 2008 presidential campaign. Do you see a connection there? How is your film different?
I think it's very different. Look, I think film is, you know, plenty put out a two-minute video to start his. I think people are putting out videos and understanding that media is much more sophisticated. I think that I hearken back really to Michael Moore's Fahrenheit 9/11. I think feature film, and I think particularly feature nonfiction or documentary, can have a major role in explaining ideas and describing people's lives and their struggles. If a screenwriter had pitched you some of this, you know, her struggles with big oil and her struggles with the Republican establishment, it would be something like out of a screenplay. So these things lend themselves to dramatic interpretation, and I think you're going to see a lot more of it in the future.
And you talk about using these characters from Alaska as a sort of Greek chorus with Sarah Palin as the heroine. Is there a risk of building her up as this character, as this leading lady, to the point where she can't possibly live up to the characterization of her?
Well, no, there's a lot of, by the way, it's not all successes. There's failures throughout this film. That's why I think it's inspirational. I think I have not heard one person that's seen this that's been politically illiberal say that I had to fix in to kind of, make this like she's some sort of superwoman. It's not that at all.
So is Sarah Palin running for president?
You know, I have no idea. The good news is the other night Greta Van Susteren asked her what she thought when she saw the film. Her quote was, it blew her away. But she mispronounced my name. So it's, I don't really have any involvement.
Would you like her to run for president? Did you make this movie to convince her to run for president?
I certainly didn't make this movie to convince her, but I do think it's very important for particularly the Republicans and the conservatives to have a campaign like 1976 where you had President Reagan as an outsider.
But, you know, we should point out that the Republicans did lose in 1976.
They lost in 1976, that's correct, but you would not have had the Reagan Revolution. That's a great point. You had to have that to have the Reagan Revolution. I mean, look, this title of The Undefeated, media, because some of the left-wing bloggers have already said, well, doesn't the guy know she lost Lieutenant Governor last
there
night?
There is that, yeah.
Well, but you have to see the film. It's about some of the values she stands for, of the American working class, of the American middle class, these things of self-reliance and self-determination. That's really the undefeated. And I made a bet at the beginning of this that American people are not just a fair people, they're an open-minded people. And I think if they see this film, I believe they'll see Governor Palin. They may not agree with her politically, but they will see her in a very different light.
So you liken yourself more to Michael Moore as a filmmaker, but Michael Moore is a very political, polarizing figure, someone who doesn't shy away from the fact that he's got an agenda, a political agenda. Do you think of yourself as a conservative counterpoint to that?
I think Michael Moore, look, is a master of the craft. I'm learning the craft. I don't agree with Michael Moore's politics, but I love watching his films because I think he's a master of what he does. Look, I think it takes the subject. We've had some Shakespearean characters in our politics. Here, I think we're, you know, very blessed in the degree that we have someone like Governor Palin, who comes from America's last frontier, and you also have President Obama, who comes from a very different perspective, but is also a very fascinating story.
Steve Bannon joined us from Arlington, Virginia. Thanks very much, Steve.
Thanks, Rachel. Appreciate having me on.